living at Barack, I was ready for some change. I thought that John McCain was just some more of the same. What I didn't know 4 years ago was that change comes slow. It took 400 years to free the slaves. Lord, I hope they're resting easy in their graves. Cause the one thing in America that we all know is that change comes slow. Change comes slow. Hey, Barack, I know you tried to compromise, but you won't get nowhere with some of them guys. I know we got a long, long way to go when that change comes slow.
Change Comes Slow by S.S. Jones. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we're going to talk about women and the Skid Row community. And I'm delighted to have with us in this studio Irene Cruz. She's a military veteran and a LACC vice commander representing women's at the American Legion here in California, and also one of the 2014 Cal Vets Women Veteran Leaders of the Year. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Melvin. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also sitting in here in the studio, we have Miss Mello over there.
Hello.
Yeah, Susan Murphy in the house with us.
Hello. Yeah.
And Cody Singleton over there. He's been with us before. He's going to be joining the conversation a little later. Okay, now I'd like to start off with Irene. Irene, can you tell our listening audience a little about your background, your military service, and your involvement with the American Legion?
I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps between 1984 and 1990. I was stationed here in Tustin, California. And I was in an air traffic control communications tech. So I've been a veteran for about 24 years, and I joined the American Legion approximately about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it is an opportunity to assist other veterans who have been going through a difficult transition. I've learned a lot myself in helping vets, and I've learned a lot from people who are not vets in the sense that they don't know the plight that veterans go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say not all veterans have a hard transition. There are some who transition very easily, but there are those who don't. And I think a lot of it has to do with, particularly here in California, there's approximately 2 million veterans in California. Of that 2 million, about 187,000 are women.
Mm-hmm.
And because California is known to have the best weather, a lot of them come here. Whether or not they were stationed here, like myself, I'm not from here, but this was my duty station. I went home for a little while, but I came back. Mm-hmm. And because you don't have that network, you don't have that family network, you don't know where to go to get help. You don't know who to ask. And particularly with this this war, a lot of those that served were reservists and National Guard. Mm-hmm. So they are a little different than active duty because they had jobs, they had families, and they got called up to serve. And so when they came back, a lot of them found their jobs were no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the employer is supposed to keep their jobs, there is a little bit of a loophole the employers can use to say if they're downsizing, then they can get rid of those jobs.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of them came back and didn't have jobs. So not being employed, how can you pay rent? How uh-huh. can you pay your mortgage? How can you pay child care if you have children?
Uh-huh.
The other issue is if they had children and didn't have anybody, let's say they didn't have a spouse or both spouses are serving in the military, they have to then give up their parental rights to somebody in the family for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back, it's not just a matter of, okay, I'm back, you know, giving my kids back. They have to go through an entire process to try to get their kids back. And so a lot of it is frustration, not knowing where to go, not knowing who to reach out to mm-hmm. get assistance.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple of things, because later on we're going to get into in-depth discussions about veteran issues, especially as it relates to women. But what was your motivation for going into the Marines, right?
Yes.
Marines, what was your motivation and how did that come about? Was that right after high school or something like that?
No, I was actually a little older. I mm-hmm. went to college for a few years and I was 22 when I went in. And I think my parents were in the Air Force. So I'm an Air Force mm. brat, born in a Navy hospital. I was born in Great Lakes Hospital.
In Illinois. Yeah.
But I had older cousins. There's a lot of military people in my family. But I had older cousins who looked after us who had been in the Marine Corps. So I think that was the influence for me to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine similar because I had out of my family, seven males and two females. Six of us served in the military. Three was in the Army. Two was in the Air Force. And I was in the Marines. Probably similar reasons. Now, also, what about the concept of, is there a lot of domestic violence that women veterans deal with when they come out of the service for different reasons?
Well, I don't think it's just coming out of the service. Mm-hmm. They've dealt with it while they're in the service too, mm-hmm. particularly if they're married. They're married to another veteran. It can possibly happen.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-husband was in the military, and I went through a similar bout of domestic violence as mm-hmm. well. So it's not, I don't think this, and I don't know the statistics offhand, but I don't think, well, it could or could not happen more so than mm-hmm. People who were not in the military, but it does happen, but it can happen in while you're in the military as well as out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we get into our in-depth discussion and interviews about the subject of domestic violence, since it's so much in the news, I would like to play a clip about domestic violence by my sister, Dr. Hattie Johnson, and this will lay the foundation for our discussions about women's in the Skid Row community.
Okay, welcome to the Cool Rattle Ford. I'm here in my hometown of Greenville, Mississippi, getting ready to do an interview with my sister, Dr. Hattie Johnson. Yes. So, Hattie, welcome to the Cool Rattle Report.
Thank you.
Yeah. First thing I want to ask you about, I know you're a doctor, you got your PhD, et cetera, like that. Can you tell us a little about your education or background, your undergrad, and then when you got your master's, your PhD, and the subject matter, dissertation?
Okay. Undergrad, Tougaloo College, bachelor's in psychology, graduated 1973, May 1973. Master's of education degree in counseling and guidance from Delta State University. In June of 1979, it's been a while. And actually, I'm a dual PhD, PhD in educational psychology and also in counseling psychology, University of Mississippi, August of 1986. What other information did you ask?
What was your dissertation about?
My dissertation was in the area of domestic violence, Why Battered Women Stay. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in that area, drawn to it for personal reasons as a formerly battered woman myself. Mm-hmm. I developed the first safe house network here in the Mississippi Delta. And I also assisted in developing the first battered woman shelter here in the Greenville, Washington County area. And that's been several years, mm-hmm. back in 1979 and 1980. And many of those organizations are still in place today. Mm-hmm. I also pioneered the development of many of the curriculums and frameworks for use among those high-risk populations. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, this is not something I do day to day anymore, and it's been a long time since I've actually thought about it. But it's an area that I still, you know, give much attention to. Mm-hmm. It's just more or less second nature now.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this: you was talking about the subject matter of your dissertation is battered women's domestic violence. Why they stay? What did you reach? Any conclusion or anything close to a definite conclusion in terms of why battered women stay in situations of violence like that?
Well, actually, what I learned was that there is no classic battered woman. And just as the woman stays in the dysfunctional relationship, it's also very important to realize, try to determine why the batterer stays. Most of the attention is focused on the woman staying and being beat or battered or abused, but the man also stays to batter and abuse. Mm-hmm. So there was no one particular reason given. Mm-hmm. It's more or less on an individual basis. What I can say is that it is a very slow, very insidious process. Mm-hmm. It's not as if the batterer, who can be male or female, mm-hmm. shows up to say, I'm going to beat you in 3 weeks or 6 months. They come in with their best behavior, mm-hmm. and very slowly break the other individual down, chipping away at their self-esteem, their self-image, in order to gain control. Mm-hmm. It is a form of violence, whether it's verbal or physical or mental, emotional. It's about power and control. Mm-hmm. So both parties are involved in the process. Mm-hmm. And that was primarily what I learned.
Okay. Do you find any major difference in these kind of nuclear family situations where if, just say, you got a relationship where it's just the male and female, no children, as opposed to relationships where children is involved? Do any dynamics, differences come about among there?
Well, there will have to be differences based on the family structure.
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do really with economics,
mm-hmm.
or educational background or status of any kind. When I was actually practicing traditional psychology back some many years ago, most of my clients were the wives of doctors, lawyers, and judges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about being poor or not having other options. In many instances, that can bind a person in the situation,
mm-hmm.
but it's about much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have children involved, then of course another layer and another dynamic would be added.
Mm-hmm.
The age of the children might also play a significant role. It's different because domestic violence is not mm-hmm. just between legal spouses.
Mm-hmm.
It's in any situation.
Mm-hmm.
It can be parent to child. It can be husband to wife. It can be child to parent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it literally runs the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we have a single mother who gets involved with someone, and that person comes in and brings violence into that situation, and that mother is the parent of a, say, a 14-15-year-old son, a male child, and you bring in another male, and all of a sudden that son is expected to adhere to the rules and regulations that this new person is coming in with.
Mm-hmm.
If they're coming in to take over as opposed to come in and build a positive relationship,
mm-hmm.
then you're likely to have some conflict there. So there, am I being clear?
Mm-hmm.
That, you
mm-hmm.
know, it,
sure.
There's just no one answer.
Mm-hmm.
It would depend on a case by case.
Okay, but the one thing that is constant in all of these dynamics is the element of control.
One-upsmanship.
Yeah.
Power and control.
Power and control. Okay, excellent. Also, in family
Okay, that's what I want to pick up on. Dr. Hattie Johnson, my sister, who got a PhD talking about domestic violence, she mentioned two things that I would like to discuss. And that's the element of control in these type of relationships and the slow process, you know, of one beating the other one down. Can you, anybody want to comment on that in relationship?
Yeah. Being a victim of domestic violence myself, it is something that I never thought I'd be a part of or even be experiencing. It came to the point where he would make up excuses and say, okay, well, I was brought up to be strong and individual, but I never expected to be helpless in a situation like this. But everything in this situation is different from another person who's experiencing domestic violence, whether mentally or physically. And it came to the point where what woke me out of it was the fact that I was almost burned alive. So I was lying in bed, and I felt something really hot. And basically my legs was the only thing that was affected. But aside from that, that was it. I said it was either my life or it was my life. And to seek out help in the situation, there are resources to help, but nobody ever expects to be in a situation of being battered. It's a process of being with that person who does the battering, and it's solely like brainwash that you need me, or they really prey on people who have low self-esteem. At the time for me, I just felt that because he was someone that I knew for a while, that I needed someone there, and I was afraid to be alone. That was what my situation was.
But I, like I said, I never expected to reach that far.
Okay.
And so it really takes a lot to get out of that situation. You really do need a support system. For me, God was the one that really gave me the strength to get out. And it's something that's a silent killer when it's not being taken care of or addressed, because what happens with the victim, they're slowly isolated from their family or friends that may help depending on the situation. And every situation is different, but you have to have that support system.
Is that element of control involved in just about all domestic violence?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
In what way?
Well, it's always, depending on what the situation is, it's always the weaker, like zoning in on what the weak points are about that person. That's what slowly gets chipped away. So if they were a confident, vibrant person before, what you do, you isolate them from their friends or family, or let them know that you don't need them. Or it's just really something that is individual, but the main component of someone being in that situation is the fact that you feel that you need this person. So you sort of tolerate it for a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it only takes one time for a person, but sometimes they're in a relationship for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that element of that person saying or doing something mm-hmm. to make you believe that mm-hmm. they're needed.
Okay.
So you tolerate it.
Irene and Susan, what are your comments on it?
Well, excuse me, if I may comment on the Ray Price and his wife, Janae, and she's standing by him, and everybody's so shocked, and I think that maybe she's used to being abused. Maybe she's used to being abused because, frankly, I think that abuse is more prevalent in our society and more common in our society than we care to think. And I think, you know, people, a lot of it, okay, they're just used to it. You know, life is not the Brady Bunch or Leave It to Beaver or Ozzie and Harriet, where everyone has some silly lightweight problem that gets solved in a matter of time, in a timely fashion, and everybody's best friends, and everybody gets along. You know, there's, everybody's family is different, and there's alcoholism, and there's fighting, and all kinds of stuff. I have two brothers, and when we were little, we used to fight like cats and dogs. And a lot of people who are brothers and sisters used to fight like cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's a common thing when you're little kids. You grow up, grow out of it. And if you don't grow out of it, then something's wrong. But for the most part, you know, I hate to say it, but maybe Janae's just used to being abused.
Okay.
And that's not a good thing. But like I said, abuse seems to be a real common thing in our society.
Okay. How about you, Irene? What are your thoughts on?
I kind of agree with that it could, people who have been abused growing up, it may seem normal. And so to them, why is everybody all concerned?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but on the topic of being isolated with the power and control, it is about power and control, but it can also be, that control can also be manipulation in the sense of, mm-hmm. as Mello was saying, making the person feel isolated, and that you need them. And I don't know, I don't want to speak for all women, but in talking to women, some of it, why they stayed is that their husband was the person that they loved. They married him, and because they loved them, they felt that they could, that their love could change that person. And that's what you have to understand. You can't change people.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is inside of them is already there, and it's up to the individual to determine when they've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all the talking in the world to somebody, but until they are ready to leave or move on, I don't think there's much you can do except as far as unless you do an intervention. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of times, then they go back. Mm-hmm. Because they're not ready to leave.
Well, let me ask you this: Do it have a lot to do with the fact that if you have just a single couple as opposed to a family where kids is involved, you hear it a lot where we say, "I want to stay together because of the
kids." Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people say that, but. The way I see it is that you're not helping the kids by exposing them to that type of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more thing, Bobby, and I would like to get your comment on this, because we don't hear this in the discussions when it comes to African American. I know Charles Barkley, he made the comment over the weekend, he was talking about the situation in the South among the African Americans. Now, how much do you think we've heard the whole concept going all the way back to slavery, that this was one of the motivating forces because of the lack of power that the male had during the slave concept, that he would lash out against those close to him and all like that? What are your thoughts in relationship to that, either?
Yeah, but like I say, for me, I keep going back to the Willie Lynch syndrome, because it seems like it's a mental enslavement that we have to go at one another anyway. And then with the black community, it's more prevalent because, you know, with the black-on-black crime and all that, then when it comes with the men and the women, it's a power struggle within that. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the men power has been taken away through many different instances, like through the going to jail, like the gentleman said last night, going to war, and mm-hmm. just a lot of different things happening. Then also when the women are taken care of, it takes away accountability for them when they have children, and then they can talk to a man any kind of way and put him down because the government has helped them with assistance, and then he's left out. Especially if he has a record, he can't get nowhere. So he feels bad that he can't provide. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things that goes on inside a man's mind when he's not able to do what he feels like he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. In other words, the government have taken the place of that yeah. man in the household in terms of providing
right.
all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how do a couple deal with that? They know the reality of the situation, especially an African-American couple. Because that's the situation with the welfare type system that we live in that won't allow a male to be in the household to get the resources that's needed. But I tell you what, before we get into that, because later on in our roundtable discussion, I want to really look at the Skid Row community and whether or not there's a certain amount of hypocrisy with all of this domestic violence in the news and the Skid Row community down there. But we're going to talk about that in details in a minute. What I want to do now is go back to an interview that I did with Irene on August the 22nd at Mixer for Vets. And then we'll come back and continue our discussion. Okay, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report, sitting out of here at this very important veteran meet and greet. And who am I speaking with, please?
My name is Irene Cruz.
Irene, you are a veteran, right?
Yes, I'm a 6-year Marine Corps veteran.
A jarhead, as they call it.
That's right.
Yeah, I was in the Marines myself way back in the day during the Vietnam period. Tell me about, are you working with one of these veteran organizations also?
Well, actually, I'm in the American Legion. I am one of the Veteran Affairs and Rehabilitation Commissioners for the state, mm-hmm. as well as for the Los Angeles County Council. Mm-hmm. I am the Vice Commander representing women veterans.
Okay. Let me ask you this. What is the biggest challenge? What do you think the biggest challenge of a veteran
transitioning from the military back to civilian life?
Knowing where to go to get resources.
Mm-hmm. Is this for male and female?
Male and female. Mm-hmm. The females have an added challenge with respect to housing, particularly if they have children. Mm-hmm. And medical issues, mm-hmm. Because sometimes the different VA facilities don't supply the treatment that they need.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about you think they have an extra challenge in relationship to children? Is that different between male and female?
Well, in the sense of if you're homeless, some of the women don't want to say that they're homeless. They don't want to say that they have children because they're afraid the county will take their children away from them. Mm-hmm. But for instance, yes. Mm-hmm. Particularly, let's say if a female veteran has a male child and you want to go to, say, they're even willing to go to a shelter, but the shelter won't let that child stay on the side with the woman. They want the child to stay over with the men.
Okay.
So that's one deterrent. Mm-hmm. Those that are sleeping in their car, they don't want to go to shelters because the shelters don't provide a safe place to park their cars. Mm. They tell them to park on the street. Mm. And then you have the added issue of trust and security. A female vet, it could even be a male vet, may be deterred from going to a shelter because they don't know who they're going to be in a room with, or either transitional housing because they put two people in a room together. They don't know that other person. Mm-hmm. So their concern is security, particularly if they have those type of issues, which was why they got out of the military in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more question I want to ask you. Do you see a different challenge in the female veterans or the female in the military now as opposed to when you was in and coming out?
Yes. When I was in, we were still a little segregated from the guys in the respect that most of the time that I was in, we were in a female-only barracks. Mm-hmm. The last two years that I was in, then they moved us to, integrated us into a male barracks. And I think that's, personally, I think that's where some of the additional challenges lie. Not that there weren't challenges before, but I think those additional challenges lie. Now, for instance, when I was in, say, on an aircraft carrier, there weren't really women on the aircraft carrier. To give an example, they sent five of us women on an aircraft carrier for training. Well, we had armed guards. We were locked in. At night, we were locked into our quarters. But now, there's like, in San Diego, not too long ago, one of the ships pulled in, and there's 5,000 people on an aircraft carrier. Well, 2,000 of those were women now.
Whoa.
So that kind of blew me away, because I had never seen anything like that. So those are some of the differences that are going on now, especially with this particular conflict. More women are being put in the front line. Even if they're not quote unquote, their job is frontline, just the fact that you're over there is, you're at harm's way. And that goes for the male veterans too, but.
Especially.
Right.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Tell us your name again and contact information for, may have a veteran out there that needs this information. How do they contact?
My name is Irene Cruz. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter as Veteran Cruz. My email address is vet.women@yahoo.com.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Coon Rhyme Report. You know, that's so interesting.
Okay, Ms. Irene Cruz, what is the situation with post-traumatic stress in female veterans?
Well, the biggest challenge with post-traumatic stress is the stigma. Because it's called post-PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of people who've been in the military, the word disorder is a problem for them. It makes them feel like there's something wrong with them. Anybody can have PTSD. PTSD is the aftermath of experiencing a traumatic event. So if you were in a major car accident, there's a big chance you have PTSD because you don't react until after the trauma is over. So while you're in the trauma, you're calm. It at least appears that you're calm. It's afterwards that you, when you relive it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people or a lot of vets don't want to say that they have PTSD because I've even seen it on depicted in commercials and things like that where it's you're the crazy veteran now. Mm-hmm. If you have PTSD. Mm-hmm. And there's different levels of PTSD. And a lot of it is manageable. It's knowing what your triggers are, things that trigger you, you know, with whatever trauma that you went through.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this, and then I want to open it up a little. Why, with all of the resources available, do you think female veterans become homeless?
Again, not knowing where to go. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have, well, with this particular conflict, like I said, a lot of the soldiers that went over there were National Guard and Reserves. Mm-hmm. So not all vets qualified to go to the VA, which is something that a lot of people don't know. Mm-hmm. Particularly with the Guard and Reserve, the difference is if you were activated under what they call Title 10, or if you were federally activated, meaning the president or Congress or somebody saying, okay, we want these troops to go. Mm-hmm. But in the case of California, a lot of those troops were activated by the governor. So they're not federally activated. Therefore, they don't qualify to go to the VA under the VA standards, even though they served. Mm-hmm. And with respect to California's vets, a lot of them have deployed more times than most, with some have been deployed as much as 12 times. Mm.
Okay, let's take a little quick break for our community calendar, and then I want to open up our round table for discussion.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. Saturday, September the 20th, 2014, from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Weingart Center for the Homeless and the Veterans Resource Corporation presents a veterans resource fair. Some of the services included will be employment information, health services, legal services, housing assistance, education training, and much, much more. The location of this resource event is the Central Library, 630 West 5th Street, Los Angeles, California, 971. For more information on this event, please contact 213-598-4046. Also, the topic for tonight is domestic violence, and I have a domestic violence hotline that's available, and the number is 800-799-7233. Once again, domestic violence hotline, the number is 800-799-7233. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to DramaStage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And a reminder, the number for the call-in show, our show, is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. I want to get back into the subject of domestic violence. There was so much discussion out there, and I want to put out, how can the people out there, how can our audience, all this we're hearing about domestic violence, can we think that you care about domestic violence when you let all of these women live in these boxes and tents on the streets of Skid Row like it's a third world country? Is this domestic violence? Isn't it a certain amount of hypocrisy to be concerned? We hear it's just being amplified in the news, and yet and still I don't hear anything about the women's of Skid Row who have to live in these boxes and all that kind of stuff. Is that hypocrisy, or am I missing something here? Anybody want to pick up on that?
You're absolutely right. It's hypocrisy in the worst kind, but domestic violence, veterans, women, they all fall in the same gamut. There are no resources out there that are willing to help with this problem, which is why this is an increasing number of women and veterans that are coming to Skid Row. The finances, they say, we only have a limited amount. L.A. County, L.A. City, the state of California, as well as nationwide, are not providing enough funding to help women who have been through domestic violence or veterans. When they come home and there's no lack of, there's no housing for them right away, it all boils down to the Workforce Investment Act as well, to retrain these women to get at least jobs to sustain them, are going into a certain population. They're falling into the same gamut of the disenfranchised because they want to be forgotten, they want to be rid of, and they're part of a population that they, when I say they, it's the powers that be that hold the funding. They do not want to give funding for housing, but yet the county of Los Angeles receives $24 billion, not million, billion dollars every year to disperse accordingly. Yet funding for housing is always lack. Funding for training, job training is always lack. It's the same story. The thing is, that has to stop. There are resources out there, and this is why we have to start getting together and start reaching out to the people, whether it has to be international or not, that has funding, that cares. Okay. And that's what the answer is. It's not looking internally anymore because they're going to tell you the same story.
Okay. Susan, let me hear from you. What do you think about that? Is it a certain amount of hypocrisy to hear all of this in the media about domestic violence and violence against women, and we hardly hear a peep when it comes to seeing all these women down here on Skid Row that's living in these boxes and tents and stuff?
Well, I think a lot of it is that it's people think of the homeless and they automatically go, what's wrong with these people? You know, I think there's a lot of what's wrong with you and all that stuff. And I was homeless for a brief period of time, and, you know, and I didn't tell anyone. But afterwards, when I recovered from it, you know, people would go, well, what happened? Or, what you know, they view you as some kind of, you know, leper. And it's like, you know, that's not the truth. It, you know, I simply ran out of money, and you don't have money to pay rent, you're out the door. That's very simple. And I remember prior to that, I spent every day looking for a job, and I couldn't find one. So anyway, I was out the door and homeless down, and went down to downtown LA. I think that a lot of people, the non-homeless people, they don't understand the homeless plight. You don't understand it till you've experienced it. So with the homeless women, I think maybe they think that people, well, you made your bed so you can lie in it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that kind of attitude. And a lot of times I don't really think people care about the homeless. They just kind of like, you know, and they see it on the front page of the paper and they turn the page, move on to the next thing. Because it's just too unpleasant.
Okay. I want to go get some comments from Irene. And then, Cody, I want your thought on that, too, on why there's not such an outrage on the women's Skid Row land in the street as it is we see in the media today. But let's pick it up with Irene.
Well, with respect to veterans, it's twofold. It's like Susan said, out of sight, out of mind. People don't want to talk about it. There's also a lot of red tape and bureaucracy that causes some of these problems. For instance, let's say a vet is homeless and they can get what you call a VASH voucher, which will allow them to get housing. Well, you have to have some type of income in order to get that VASH voucher, because you do have to pay some rent. It may not be the same level as what other people pay, but you do have to pay some kind of rent. So you got to try to find that person a job. And we've gone through this with a lot of veterans. We find them a job. They start work. But the pay now, they no longer qualify to get the VASH voucher because now they make too much.
Paradox.
Exactly. They make too much. Then, so now they have a job, but even if they can pay the rent and no longer, let's say they make enough money that they don't need the VASH voucher, they can pay their own rent. But a lot of landlords won't rent to them unless you've been on a job 6 months. So what is the person to do? There's a cycle there. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's caused by bureaucracy. And these are the things that if these things were addressed, some of those other problems would go away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cody, what are your comments? I know you know about the Skid Row area down there. You see a lot down there also. What are your thoughts about what's happening in the Skid Row area, especially in relationship to women's?
Well, I mean, I've been homeless out here for a year, and the women I see on the streets, like, everybody, all right.
Okay.
Well, anyways, all right.
I can't think. Okay, you want to pick up on it, Bob?
Yeah, let me.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Well, I guess what he was trying to pinpoint is that a lot of the women on Skid Row are not receiving the help that they should be. It should be on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
It is so cookie cutter that one size fit all treatment is given, which is why a lot of the women go through the same circle of going to the wrong source, which you can't tell an alcoholic to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting if they have problem with drinking, not with alcohol. I mean, with drugs. The point is, we have to find caseworkers put in place to direct the women into a right resource that's right for them. And there are resources out there that did not completely run out of funding, but they are not directed there. And yet when they get there, as Irene was saying, there's a lot of red tape. There's certain things that they have to do that they're not qualified for, or they make too much money now that everything has been raised up. Like today, metro fares raised up.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that the transportation is going to get any better, but the fact that we are not making the minimum wage enough to sustain ourselves is why homelessness is on the rise, especially for veterans, for people who serve time.
Let's talk a little about possible solutions. What do you think we can do to make things, what do it take to make things better in these areas like Skid Row, especially for veterans and female veterans? Let's go here now, Irene.
One of the things that we've talked about recently is the intake, or that first communication with the person. A lot of people are given the same treatment, but one person's needs might be different from the other person's needs. If they just took a little more time to ascertain exactly what that person needs, one person might only need 3 items of additional support and help, whereas the next person might need 5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that time is not taken to find out exactly what the person needs. They're just told, go over here, go over there. And a lot of times when they get over there, the next person is now, well, why are you here?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me go to Susan, and then I want to go to you because I want you to talk a little about your organization, what kind of impact you think that could have. Susan.
I was going to say that when I was homeless and I went down and to San Julian Street, and I don't know anything about that, and I remember being interviewed by this lady named Tina, and was interviewed and all that stuff, then they'd like throw you out, and I remember this woman that came after me was arrested for drug possession, and she was trying to sell some drugs because she needed to make some money, and she wasn't necessarily a bad person, but she just knew, had a very limited knowledge of how to make money. And I remember she was interviewed by this Tina woman after me, and this drug woman got housing immediately, and she got all kinds of help immediately. And I'm like, I'm unemployed, and I hate drugs, and I don't do drugs, and and I'm being, I don't have a place. Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to mention that a lot of the people who are assigned to help you down in homeless hell are absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
They treat you like livestock. It's just
cattle call.
Horrible.
Yep.
And I want to say one other thing is like years ago, I needed some dental work done, and I would find all the resources I could and go to, you know, URM Union, and I'd go to all the places and like the URM. You need a tooth pulled? No. Okay, we'll see you. I was like, well, I
right.
No,
exactly.
I don't want my
That's
tooth pulled.
Their
I want
idea of dental work is just to pull your teeth.
Yep.
And keep
yeah,
moving.
Really. Like how's that supposed to help me? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's horrible. But, and they just treat you like, well, see ya, you know, really. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Okay, we're almost a wind down, but quickly tell us about your organization, what you think it can have some impact. Take about a minute of that, and then give us contact information. We're going to have the last words from Irene over here.
Okay, my name is Mellow Desire, and I'm a filmmaker for Inner City Youths, the Incarcerated, Homeless, and Veterans. Our nonprofit, the Kingdom Warriors Foundation, is set to redefine performing arts as a serious form of rehabilitation. Everyone loves to act, sing, and dance, and what we're trying to do is to get funding so you can get paid to do so. Mm-hmm. When you're creating an item, you automatically forget about what's outside because you are creating something positive. That is our mission, is to have disenfranchised population to step outside the box.
Okay.
It's free training.
Give us your contact information.
You can find us on Facebook. We have our Facebook page that update daily. And you can contact me at 718-510-4803, or you can email me at theyearofthediamond@gmail.com. And
okay. Okay. I got it. Let me move to Irene. Irene, you got the final comments and your contact information.
I think a lot of the problems would not necessarily solved, because these problems are not new. These problems have been going on for a long time. I think there needs to be fresh faces that look at these problems and come up with solutions.
Okay.
But I think instead of looking at the top, they need to look at the boots on the ground, where the actual problems lie, and deal with it down there.
Okay. And give us your contact information for those who want to get in touch with you to talk to you more about this subject.
You can either email me at vet.women@yahoo.com, or you can call me at area code 323-977-9838.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to extend a special thanks to my special in-studio guests, Irene Cruz, Miss Mellow Susan Murphy. Susan, you're going to have to stop back and again and visit us more.
And I will.
Down here.
I will.
I'd like to mention that we got a couple of special guests coming up on the 29th. But we're on the 6th of October here. We're going to talk about the homeless and bringing in Ted Hayes. He developed a Dome Village here in L.A., ran it for about 11 years. He'll be our in-studio guest coming up. Now, please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Change Comes Slowly by S.S. Jones.
When I first met Barack, I was ready for some change. I thought that John McCain was just more of the same. What I didn't know 4 years ago was that change comes slow. It took 400 years to free the slaves. Lord, I hope they're resting easy in their graves. Cause the one thing in America that we all know is that change comes slow. Change comes slow. Hey, Barack, I know you tried to compromise, but you won't get nowhere with some of them guys. I know we got a long, long way to go, and that change comes slow. Yeah, it took 400 years to free the slaves. Lord, I hope they're resting easy in their graves. Cause the one thing in America we all know, change comes slow, change comes slow. So Barack Obama, keep on doing what you do. Keep cleaning up the mess that they left for you. One thing in America we all know, that change comes slow. Change comes slow.